Gareth Publishing International presents Theft of the Master by Edwin Alexander, read by Alex Jennings. Prologue, January 1493. Archaeology of a Murder. January 1493. Martin Luther is 10 years old. Michelangelo is 18. In Milan, Leonardo is designing a flying machine. Richard Plantagenet, smiling villain, is dead. The Wars of the Roses have ended, and Henry VII rules Tudor England. Alexander Borgia, Pope Alexander VI, thief, adulterer, multiple murderer, and vicar of Christ, rules the one true church. Estonia, remotest and wildest of the Baltic states, is in the 200th year of foreign domination, which will persist for 5 centuries more. In Tallinn, Estonia's capital, icicles drip from the eaves of the Church of the Holy Spirit. Inside, breath smoking in the frozen air, Heinrich Schenk, trader in amber, leader of the town council, kneels before the altar. The cold stone floor is hard on aging knees, but strong in the faith, he makes no complaint. He is tall and sturdily built, rather worn by his 60 years, but with grave presence. His round, fleshy face, heavy brow, and deep-set eyes mark his German ancestry. An austere man, his one weakness is for elaborate and expensive dress. In acknowledgement of the evening's ritual importance, he wears a floor-length robe of burgundy silk velvet, deeply pleated across the chest and with balloon sleeves. He prays for a safe journey. Prayer is his travel insurance. He will follow the familiar yet hazardous route of the amber trade, but his purpose this time will be different. On behalf of his wife, Maria, he will commission a masterpiece. A month's arduous journeying later, Heinrich arrived in Krakow, then capital of Poland. In the town's finest private residence, he followed a young serving girl through rush-strewn corridors to the Spartan workroom of one of Europe's greatest sculptors. It was long, narrow, and undecorated, furnished only with a small writing desk, 2 chairs, and a side table bearing the remains of a meal. Giant logs smouldered ineffectually in an enormous fireplace. Stone dust and the smell of sweat hung in the smoky air. The servant nervously announced, "Herr Schenk from Tallinn, sir," and backed out quickly, her wooden-soled tread receding to leave the room in thick silence. On the hearth, a large and shaggy-coated dog got to its feet, looked at Heinrich curiously, stretched its muscular body, then, with a groan, rearranged itself for sleep. At the far end of the room, a block of raw stone was set on a heavy wooden table, and Weitstor stood before it, his back to the door, in operatic pose. Erect, right foot half a stride ahead of the left, head thrown back, hands clasped behind him, motionless as the stone itself. Heinrich waited. Despite meticulous preparations, he had suffered a particularly taxing journey. Scarcely 12 miles from Tallinn, fording a swollen river, he had almost drowned. Then, after surviving the routine hazards of bears, wolves, bitter weather, and sketchy navigation to reach Warsaw, an uncharacteristically rash encounter with a street vendor's mutton pie had delayed him by 3 days spent mainly on a commode. And finally, in deep forest, only a few miles short of Krakow, he had narrowly escaped an attempted kidnapping by brigands. Perversely, these experiences had produced in him an inner calm, which enabled him to view his host's calculated rudeness with amused detachment. At last, Stoss turned and shuffled to confront his visitor. He was a bulky, round-backed figure, dressed in an ankle-length, shapeless grey smock, which flapped around him as he moved, like a mainsail close-hauled. Despite the chill of the stone floor, his feet were bare. His face, grey as his smock, was coarse, heavy-jowled, the eyes deep and angry. On each cheek was a purple scar.